So I'm going to talk a little bit about my thesis project. Mostly it's going to be basically the idea of my thesis project. It does have some results in it, in the sense that the code is written, but simulations haven't been done yet. So I'm working on terrestrial formation of terrestrial planets, starting from the middle phase, so large planetesimals, just to give you a context, up through oligarchic growth. So previous work on the middle and late phases of planet formation sort of fall into two main categories. The first category is statistical or semi-analytic methods, and the second is direct numerical simulations. Now, both of these methods have strengths and weaknesses. The statistical method is basically in the sense that you take a bunch of particles and you put them into radial and mass bins, and their interaction is dominated by using particle-in-a-box formalism, like kinetic theory. And the advantage is that it can do a huge number of particles, 10 to the 8 at least, can handle basically anything that you can write down analytically. So gas effects from the nebula, fragmentation, analytic representation of fragmentation, but fragmentation nonetheless, and anything else that you really want to put in there. So it's very strong in that sense. It's a major drawback is that it depends basically on a homogeneous distribution. So the mass needs to be homogeneously distributed, basically. Plus, it's not self-consistent. There's no back reaction from particles on the gas, and the gravity between the particles is calculated very short range. Direct numerical simulations do not have that problem. They can deal with heterogeneous distribution. You can go as far as you want as long as you have a computer that can run that long. Its major problem is that it's very computationally expensive to have to do that, calculating the interaction between every single particle and all of the other particles. And so to date, the largest simulation that's been done from the middle phase is about 10 to the 4 particles, and that was by Kakubo and Ida in 2002. And because it is so computationally expensive, the planetesimal collisions, which are the main growth mechanism of planetesimals, has been significantly simplified in all direct numerical simulations, either by using perfect merging, which ignores any fragmentation, or by using an extrapolated fragmentation law based on laboratory experiments, which ignores gravity. And that's a big problem, because gravity is the major force, it's the dominant force in this regime. But all is not lost. Our idea is to use roll pile planetesimals. Now, you may think that is absolutely insane, and hopefully after this slide I will have convinced you that that's not true. I mean, it's okay, I think, to do this. And so the first piece of evidence that would allow us to think that maybe planetesimals, roll pile planetesimals, is not completely nuts, is that there's a significant amount of observational evidence from small bodies in the solar system, like comets and asteroids, that these things, that comets and asteroids are gravitational aggregates. They're bound by gravity, and gravity dominates. So for asteroids, almost all asteroids larger than 250 meters spin slower than their critical roll pile breakup limit. In addition, several asteroids have extremely large craters, craters that are so large that if it was a monolithic solid body dominated by strength, it could not have sustained such a large impact to create that crater. It would have been completely disrupted. Also, a lot of them have very low bulk density, like 1.5 to 1.8 grams per cubic centimeter. And the kicker is Shoemaker-Levy 9, which tidally disrupted when it went by Jupiter, and thus basically had no tensile strength. But, of course, these are all pieces of evidence that are current, right? It's hard to extrapolate from that all the way back to planetesimals. But I argue that it doesn't really matter, because we are going to start in the middle phase. We're talking about starting with planetesimals that are tens of kilometers in size, hundreds of kilometers in size. And collisions between small bodies fall into two regimes, either the strength regime, where the collision outcome is dependent on the strength of the body, or dominated by the strength of the body, and the gravity regime, where the collision outcome is dominated by gravity. And if you look at this plot, which is from Asteroids 3, Eric Asphog's chapter, this is a plot of the strength of, target radius as a function of, and this axis is the amount of energy needed to disrupt a body such that the largest remnant is 50% of the initial mass of the body and the rest of it has gone off to infinity. And this side is the strength regime, and this side is the gravity regime, and you see that the transition is at about 1 kilometer. This is in centimeters down here. And we're going to start with objects that are 100 kilometers. So I think gravitationally bound planetesimals is a reasonable thing to use. So assuming that you believe me, and I'm going to start talking about my collision model that I'm going to that I've integrated into our n-body code. And my collision model is a two-phase model. So the first thing that happens is when a collision is detected, those collision parameters, the impact parameter, the relative speed of the planetesimals, the mass ratio, and the coefficient of restitution are used to interpolate what the mass of the largest remnant is predicted to be from a lookup table, a database of collisions that were done in a black box, basically, or in a closed box system. And so here, up here, is my database. And this is relative speed in units of escape speed and the mass of the largest remnant in units of the system's mass, of system mass. There are four lines on each because I've shown you four mass ratios. The top line with dots in it is 1 to 9. The second line is 1 to 6. The third line is 1 to 3. And the last line is 1 to 1, meaning that the projectile, I'm talking about the mass of the target to the mass of the projectile. Mass of the projectile to the mass of the target. And these are at different impact parameters. So 0, 14 degrees, 30 degrees, 49 degrees. And for each of these simulations, yeah. Oh, the impact parameter angle. Yes. So it's just the angle for the triangle. So that's the, if these two things were touching, then the length would be the impact parameter, and the angle, the right, this little angle here, doot to doot. Is that okay? Yeah? So 49 degrees is glancing. And 0 is head on. Okay? Okay. I'm assuming that's right. Is that okay? Yes. Okay. Right. So is there another question? No. Okay. Each of these simulations was done using something like this. So we have a target and a projectile, and the targets are, everything is made up of rubble piles, which are a fixed number of self-gravitating hard spheres. And the pieces of the rubble pile are indestructible. They can't be fragmented, they don't merge, they just bounce in an inelastic way with a coefficient of restitution governing how much energy is lost. Right.
They exert gravity on each other.
They exert gravity on each other, yes. There is no tensile strength connecting them. And there is no surface friction in these simulations. Yes, or billiard balls, yes. Right.
How many of the small particles in each?
For these simulations? The target, so the largest body, had 1,000. And then the projectile had as many as it would need, made up of the same sized particles. Right. Okay. So, in the first phase, the code gives the, you look up the collision outcome, and it reports back the largest remnant. Now, if the largest remnant is a significant fraction of the system's mass, so of the total mass of the two planetesimals that were about to collide, and the rest is sort of negligible amount of mass, then in the collision, in this big simulation, it just uses the predicted mass, the predicted collision outcome from this lookup table. If the collision outcome is predicted to be, if the largest remnant is small in comparison to the total system mass, or there are a significant number of roughly equal-sized remnants, then it actually does a direct collision, a direct numerical simulation, just like this, in this big disk. So I'm going to show you what I mean, because I realize that words are very difficult to explain. Maybe we can, is there any way to turn off the lights? Actually, hopefully this will run again. Yeah. Okay. Pardon? Okay. Let's see if I can get this. Okay. So the top collision up here was one that was determined to be reasonably complicated. The remnant was not that big, and it decided that the environment would affect the collision outcome significantly. So what happened there was that it substituted in rubble piles, allowed the collision to occur. After 10 dynamical times, the pieces of the rubble pile allowed themselves to merge back into a single particle. And that's why you saw it, the number of particles decreasing, and it sort of going bloop, 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 or whatever, however you want, whatever sound effect you want to use there. And the bottom collision was determined to be reasonably simple. And you saw that basically it's significant in size. So the remnant was quite large. And this actually wasn't a merge. It wasn't a merge. It looked up in the table, and it substituted in the largest remnant, which was not 100%. And then you say, well, what about the other stuff, right? And what about all this little stuff that's floating around in this big disk? The number of particles is going to go up continuously every time I have a collision. And so what we've done is we consider that stuff dust. And for an interpolated collision, or the one that is used with the when you look up the answer in the lookup table, it goes directly into a radial bin, and that's tracked in a semi-analytic way. Similarly, after about 20 dynamical times, this little stuff that hasn't re-accreted onto anything else will also end up in that dust bin. So the dust, anything that's below our resolution limit, gets accreted onto planetesimals that are in that radial bin using just the conservation of linear momentum. And we assume that the dust is in circular orbits, planar circular orbits, so that basically every time the planetesimal accretes a little bit of dust, it circularizes that effect, it circularizes the planetesimal just a little bit. And if it has a bit of z velocity out of the plane, it comes down a little bit into the plane. And that's what I was trying to express here. All of this has been integrated into our n-body code, which is a parallelized hierarchical tree code called PKD-Grav, and this is a very good reference for it. So up to this point, I've tried to describe the method that I was using to handle collisions in a realistic way. And these are the simulations that I'd really like to do. And it sort of follows Kakubo and Ida's simulations that they published in 2002. And the purpose is to investigate what not just how direct collisions, modeling direct collisions, will change the outcome of terrestrial planet formation, but how the environment will change the outcome of terrestrial planet formation. So I'm going to do a simulation of the standard model, as well as a heavy disk, a light disk, and having a steeper and more shallow distribution of the mass, and run through runaway and oligarchic, which actually might take me more than 5 times 10 to the 5 years, because this collision model is not perfect merging. So in the end, I'm modeling planetesimal collisions in detail, which I think is very important, because it's the main mechanism for which planetesimals grow, and that's how we make terrestrial planets. And I hope to get realistic timescales for terrestrial planet formation. So I'm not using an increase in the radius, a false inflation of the radius of the planetesimals in order to get the simulation to run faster. So hopefully the timescales that I get will be realistic right away. And also this will test our understanding of planet formation because it includes a self-consistent model of fragmentation. And that's it.
Let me first ask a couple of questions before I let Fred go. If we look at, presumably you're looking at this intermediate mass range. At some point, that the material strength does become important.
Again.
For example, that when, we see a lot of meteorites, which are iron stone meteorites, clearly differentiation takes place. And clearly fragmentation took place after differentiation.
Yeah.
So a question is that how difficult is it for you to include some degree of material strength and structure
into the pieces of the rubble pile? So I don't think that that's particularly hard. The problem is that since we're assuming, then you run into the problem that all of the things are spheres. And so how far do you want to take your spherical cow representation of your planetesimal? Does it make sense to include fragmentation when you're not realistically coming up with real shapes and stuff like that, and real pieces? Yes. Yeah. No, so it definitely can be done. It's not that hard.
Okay. Well, the other issue is that if we look at the size distribution of craters, okay, we get a certain power law distribution. Now, is there a natural reason from the fragmentation law that you necessarily get this type of size distribution versus the collision law? In other words, could this size distribution, if you do this type of simulation, generate a size distribution, if you happen to like what you generated, lots of small particles all over the place, and then they reassemble, is a reassemble process that determines the size distribution, or is it the actual fragmentation process that destroys?
That assembles the size distribution. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'll find out.
It's the fragmentation process at the lower end of the size distribution which determines the power law. In the higher end, the fragmentation and the reassembly, you get deviations from the
power.
Depends
law
what it's made up of, though.
Yeah, but the power law, there's no natural break in the power law.
Right. No.
I mean, one can see this power law goes all the way up.
Right.
I think in some asteroid families,
they're
completely
bright,
actually, in
experiments. Well, I don't know about asteroid families, but in experiments, you do see it, yes. But
crater distribution doesn't show this.
No.
It goes all
the way up. It goes all the way up, yeah.
It's
very weird.
Yeah, very straight.
Right.
Universal.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know exactly what that means.
Or 250, 500 kilometer size craters.
Yeah, sure. That's gravity regime.
Yeah.
So, but when you asked fragmentation, also, I wanted to go back to that question quickly. So we can easily put in a simple fragmentation law, right? But in order to do real fragmentation, the way Eric Aspug did fragmentation, with a real equation of state, it's just way too slow. So that's one problem with that. We're still computationally limited that way. We can't do like really, really good. We can't have equations of state for all of these things and have them both have gravity and propagate their flaws properly. But yeah. Oh dear.
Fred, you had a question before I asked.
You say I want to ask about in general question about treatment of collisions and body.
Oh, okay.
Some people have faced very much the same kind of problems for star cluster simulations.
Who could that somebody be?
Not me. But Mark Freitag, for example, has done recently very much the same kind of thing you're trying to do. Looking at first constructing this enormous database of hydrodynamic collisions,
Yes.
Looking it up. And it's the problem there, and I wonder how you address that problem, is that you have a four-dimensional parameter space. And unless you do something very creative and very smart about how you do the lookup, interpolation, and even worse, extrapolation in this large four-dimensional space, usually you get crap.
You get crap. Okay.
Unless you've done a really gigantic number of calculations and you have some very smart way of physically interpolating.
So I don't know if I've done it cleverly or not, but I can tell you what I've done. So indeed, I have a four-dimensional parameter space. It's not particularly broad, but the relative speeds of the collisions, at least initially, are fairly low. So that's why I didn't go insanely long. Also, I don't use my lookup table for all collisions. I just use my lookup table as a first guess. And then only in the case that the collision is very slow and the result is basically perfect merging, do I use the result from the lookup table. If it's not, if it's complicated, which is the case, I think, a significant fraction of the time.
Like what?
I don't know yet. I mean, yeah, I have done a run, but... Pardon?
Like complicated.
Okay, so I mean one of several things. either the largest remnant is reasonably small in comparison to the system mass. So the largest remnant that it predicts is reasonably small. So the velocity of the collision was reasonably high, which means that the likelihood of gravitational reaccretion from the pieces that it's floating around is significant. Or it's a glancing impact, and there are a lot of small gravitational reaccretions immediately. And that means that the environment will really affect the outcome of the collision.
Well, most collisions are grazing, right?
Well, it has to be significantly grazing. And the mass ratio has to be close to one. So if the mass ratio is significant, if it's just a small thing hitting this big planetesimal, it's going to be a perfect merger.
Right.
And it doesn't need to substitute in rubble piles to do that, right? But otherwise, it does substitute in rubble piles, and it does a very good job of the collision. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you were to do, I don't know, 20% of collisions the hard way, by actually calculating them,
how slow would it be?
Would that be the bottleneck in your calculation?
Oh, it's definitely the bottleneck. There's no question about that.
What? So even 1% would still be the
bottleneck. Oh, yeah. 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 The code, because it's parallelized. So you know, and I'm running a million particles, basically, a 10 to the 5 or a million. And so I'm running on like 8 or 16 processors, at least, if not more than that. And so basically, the collision happens on one processor and has to do this rubble pile thing. The other ones stop until the collision is done. But the rest of the simulation is so fast, and collisions happen fairly infrequently. You can't, because the two particles are on the same, I mean, they're right next to each other. What are you going to do? Divide up like 50 particles over, can't do that. I mean, I don't think it's going to gain you anything. What's it going to do? I mean, it makes sense to spatially divide a million particles, but not 50. The problem is that the time scale for the between, so you have a rubble pile, and the time scale of the collisions in the rubble pile is very short in comparison to the time scale of everything else, right? So when you have a collision between two rubble piles, that thing needs to be done very, very small time steps. So it drops down to very, very small time steps just to resolve that collision, and then it pops back out again.
Well,
but
these are kind of common problems.
Well, I think it's plenty fast. You know, I can do 7,000 years in 2 days on two processors for 4,000 particles. I mean, I think that's fine. Anyway, more questions or? Yeah.
Sorry. I just wanted to point out that the comment she made really may not be the best evidence that planet decimals are frightening or level planets.
Mm-hmm.
Because just before, as it broke up, it passed through the ring.
It did.
Source objects of the ring, and you would argue that it's consolidated, otherwise it wouldn't have broken up and released, you see. And the only asteroid we've actually looked at closely is consolidated. That's Eris.
I don't want to start a fight.
I agree. Someone has to go.
I'd say Eros definitely has strength. It is also very fragmented. I will let that lie. But I agree with you. I don't think that looking at current small bodies necessarily means that planetesimals are rubble piles. I think it is possible that they are. And I think that it's more important that we're safely in the gravity regime anyway.
It probably, there's another argument for there being gravity.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just accreted.
Yes.
They haven't had time to merge and compress and stuff.
Right. But no, you're absolutely right about that, yeah.
But if you have gravel piles, how do you still preserve these large craters? Presumably, many of them have craters. Right?
Yes.
For example, if you look at
as long as they have compressive strength.
Ida and huh?
As long as they have compressive strength.
Yeah. Yeah. I was using spheres and I also didn't have any surface friction. And in theory, even on my objects, if you turn on surface friction, you can preserve a crater.
Now, Harris used to make the point that the focus is inside the ocean. That's perfectly stable, even if it's a rubber pile.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sure.
But it has to have the fluid and liquidity to squash down and be unstable.
But to preserve that, it's still to preserve some structure. You need to have some material strength.
So my question was about the realistic time scale. Clearly that depends on the initial condition.
Well, yes. From the initial condition to through runaway growth, when runaway growth switches to oligarchic growth. In the sense, yes. So, for a specific initial condition compared to a perfect merging simulation, so the time scale, assuming that you starting at a specific initial condition, is going to be real, is what I'm saying, as opposed to something that you're going to have to figure out because you've used an inflated radius.
Is there any way to invert this process somehow or figure out from the outcome what the initial conditions might be?
Oh, well, maybe. That would be the effect of the environment. No, it would be the effect of the environment, which hopefully we will be able to tell the difference, or at least a hint of differences.
Can you use this calculation to rule out that contours are formed from collisions, as claimed by Yang Yu.
No, I really don't think so. I'm talking about things that are really big.
Well, you can use your method and try to get together with him, try to see if you can.
I see what you're saying. I see. Not just this method. I understand. I'm sorry. Maybe.
Look at some implications.
Yeah.
Just a suggestion.
Okay. I'll take it as a suggestion. Right. I think it's the next person's turn.
Thank you. So,